Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wainer. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Novartis, we feature interviews highlighting updates in the treatment of patients with hormone receptor-positive breast cancer that were presented at the 2022 San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium. Yenxin Liu, MD, PhD, the Division Chief of Medical Oncology in the Department of Oncology at National Taiwan University Hospital in Taipei, discussed the primary results from the Phase 2 Right Choice trial, which investigated ribociclib plus endocrine therapy in premenopausal patients with aggressive HR-positive, HER2-negative breast cancer. Patrick Nevin, MD, PhD, a gynecologist and oncologist at University Hospitals Leuven in Belgium, shared findings from the pooled analysis of post-progression treatments after first-line ribociclib and endocrine therapy in HR-positive, HER2-negative advanced breast cancer in the Phase 3 MONALEESA 2, MONALEESA 3, and MONALEESA 7 trials. William Jacot, MD, PhD, a professor of oncology at the University of Montpellier in France, walked through the primary efficacy and safety results from the Phase 2 AMELIE trial, which evaluated first-line ribociclib starting doses of 400 mg and 600 mg in HR-positive, HER2-negative advanced breast cancer. Ariel Medford, MD, a clinical fellow in medicine at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, Massachusetts, discussed cell-free DNA monitoring in the Phase 2 LEADER trial, which is evaluating adjuvant endocrine therapy plus ribociclib in localized HR-positive, HER2-negative breast cancer. Laura Spring, MD, a clinical and translational investigator at Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center and Harvard Medical School, both in Boston, explained results from an analysis of the Phase 3 RESPONDER trial that evaluated the effect of HER2-low status on clinical outcomes in patients with HR-positive, HER2-negative breast cancer who received endocrine therapy with or without chemotherapy. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Liu. To start off, what were the rationale and design for the Right Choice study?
Right Choice is a randomized phase 2 study to compare the efficacy of ribociclib plus endocrine therapy versus combination chemotherapy in hard-to-treat population, that is, patients with aggressive HR-positive, HER2-negative advanced breast cancer. And we specifically choose pre- and perimenopausal women is because of that they are more tolerable to the toxicity associated by combination chemotherapy. So the target population would be pre- and perimenopausal women. And this is in the first line setting. Inclusion criteria would be that when the physician consider combination chemotherapy is the treatment of choice, then she will be eligible. Inclusion criteria just including symptomatic visceral metastasis, rapid disease progression, or markedly symptomatic non-visceral disease. With one of these 3 points, then physician may consider that combination chemotherapy would be the treatment of choice for them, then they will be eligible. Patient will randomize to receive ribociclib plus non-steroidal aromatase inhibitor plus gosarilin or physician choice combination chemotherapy, which included docetaxel plus capecitabine or paclitaxel plus gemcitabine or capecitabine plus vinorabine. And the primary endpoint was progression-free survival, and a lot of key secondary endpoints were also planned.
What key efficacy data from this study are important to note?
For the primary endpoint, progression-free survival, the results showed that first-line ribociclib plus endocrine therapy provide a significant PFS benefit of one additional year, more than combination chemotherapy, with a hazard ratio of 0.54 and a p-value of 0.0007. The benefit of ribociclib plus endocrine therapy over combination chemotherapy is significant and clinically meaningful. And regarding to the secondary endpoint, including overall response rate and the time to response, they are similar between combination chemotherapy and ribociclib plus endocrine therapy. So we all know For combination chemotherapy, it has a high tumor response rate, which is why it is preferred for patients with aggressive disease. But with our study, we just showed that ribociclib plus endocrine therapy just matching the high tumor response rate. So it just will make the doctor more confident to use chemotherapy and reluctant to use combination chemotherapy because it is associated with more toxicity.
What specific safety data were seen in each arm?
While neutropenia and leukopenia were higher in ribociclib, but everybody knows that CDK4/6 inhibitor-related neutropenia is asymptomatic and is rare to have infection. On the other hand, incidence of symptomatic adverse event such as nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, alopecia, handful syndrome are much higher in patients with combination chemotherapy. So patients will experience more symptomatic adverse event if they receive combination chemotherapy than ribociclib.
What unmet needs does this combination address in this population?
Combination chemotherapy is one of the standard, and for a patient who is relatively intolerable to combination chemotherapy, then all you can do is single agent chemotherapy. But for a patient with critical situation, you need a regimen with high response rate, and therefore they have to tolerate the side effect. So for the patients who are intolerable to combination chemotherapy, of course, ribociclib plus endocrine therapy have a greater response rate than single agent chemotherapy. But for the patient, even though they are tolerable to combination chemotherapy, still, ribociclib plus endocrine therapy can provide a longer progression-free survival, lower toxicity, better treatment compliance, which is all important for the successful of the treatment for our patient in critical situation.
What else is important to note about ribociclib use in this population going forward?
According to ABC5 guideline, they raise the bar of for defining the visceral crisis. That is, if a patient have a liver metastasis, then they have to be a bilirubin level greater than 1.5 upper normal limit. But it is not included in this clinical trial because that dose modification is difficult in either chemotherapy arm or ribociclib arm. So that's why we did not recruit this population. So when you try to treat this population, a close monitoring plan for toxicity and efficacy would be mandatory. Either receive chemotherapy, either receive ribociclib.
Dr. Nevin, could you start off by summarizing what has previously been seen in the MONALEESA 2, 3, and 7 studies?
So it's a pooled analysis of three phase 3 randomized controlled trials using ribociclib with endocrine treatment compared with endocrine treatment alone, MONALEESA 2, 3, and 7. 7 was in premenopausal patients, and 2 and 3 was in postmenopausal patients. So what has been published before is that adding ribociclib to these endocrine agents prolongs the median progression-free survival and also prolongs the median overall survival.
What was the rationale for this pooled analysis of post-progression therapies?
If you give a first-line endocrine treatment with a CDK4/6 inhibitor, it's interesting to see what is going to be the next line of treatment, so the next subsequent treatment, if patients have progressed on that combination of treatment as compared to the single agent endocrine treatment. So we ended up with 1200 such patients, half in the arm of the combination treatment and half in the arm of the other treatment, which was tamoxifen or letrozole or fulvestrant.
What findings from this analysis were shared at SABCS?
The main finding actually is that the tumors that were treated with the combined therapy, so the endocrine treatment with the ribociclib, they were not actually more aggressive if they were treated with a subsequent agent. Important was that patients who had combined treatment, so the endocrine treatment with the ribociclib, they were actually less likely to have chemotherapy as subsequent treatment. Also, the duration that the patients were on the treatment predicted the subsequent treatment. In both arms, if this was short, median PFS, they were more likely to get chemotherapy. If it was long, they were more likely to get endocrine treatment or endocrine treatment and targeted treatment. It was interesting to see that numerically, the patients who were treated with the combination, so endocrine treatment with ribociclib, were actually longer on the subsequent treatment, unless they did get chemotherapy. The group with the longest overall survival was the group of patients who had the combined treatment, so the CDK4/6 inhibitor ribociclib with the endocrine treatment, followed by another CDK4/6 inhibitor or the same CDK4/6 inhibitor. So that group had a median OS of more than 18 months.
What do these findings indicate about remaining unmet needs in the HR-positive, HER2-negative space?
So the unmet medical need is, who are the patients who have a very short median PFS in both groups? If we know which patient can be treated with endocrine treatment alone for a long time, that we only can add or change it to the combination treatment in second line, so there is a big unmet need. Who are these patients where we might give single agent endocrine treatment alone and then following in the second line with the combination treatment? So the unmet need is, who are the patients who are not doing well on the combination, because, you know, we don't have these markers for resistance to the combined treatment.
What is your main message for colleagues about this study?
Patients who initially start with endocrine treatment and the CDK4/6 inhibitor ribociclib, that these tumors are actually not more aggressive, and there seems to be something that these tumors remain endocrine sensitive, because if there is a long duration on the combined treatment, you can still expect a long duration of your subsequent endocrine treatment alone or combination with the targeted treatment.
Going forward, how might these findings better inform the future use of ribociclib combinations in this population?
What I think is important to know, whether we can start with fulvestrant combined with ribociclib or with the AI combined with ribociclib. We have actually seen comparing, but you can never compare trials in between, that if you start with fulvestrant and ribociclib, that you see the longest median overall survival as compared to the AI with ribociclib. So we still don't know what is the best to start with.
Dr. Jacot, to start, what was the rationale for the AMALIE trial?
AMALIE was a randomized phase two study that was requested by the FDA after the approval of ribociclib and the development at the same time of the NATALEE adjuvant trial, to look at side effect mitigation effect of a reduced dose of ribociclib. The labeled dose being 600 milligrams, and in AMALIE it is compared to a 400 milligram dose. That is a classical first step reduction of dose. With something we must highlight, the fact that the primary endpoint was overall response rate. And it's probably, to my point of view, the main pitfall of this study, because we must remind that we are dealing with hormone receptor positive, HER2-negative metastatic breast cancers, with a quite neat proportion of patients without measurable disease and with bone lesions that are not so easy to evaluate to say overall response yes or no. So the primary endpoint was a non-inferiority of the 400 dosage compared to the 600. And last year, a first communication was made detailing that this non-inferiority was not met.
What efficacy and safety data have been seen so far in this trial?
Here we have some more mature data allowing in one hand the overall response and the other hand a first evaluation of the progression-free survival. That is probably a more logical endpoint at the end. The overall response rate remains lower, 47% versus 55%. However, I must stress that the progression-free survival data is exactly identical between the two arms, 25 months and 25 months. So quite really reassuring, and at the same time with the secondary endpoint of the study, that was the mitigating effect of reducing the dose regarding the classical side effects of ribociclib. First of them being the QTC increase, and the QTC increase is significantly lower in the 400 dose level, and second, the neutropenic rate. So something that cannot be said to be non-inferior in terms of overall response rate, however, with the same PFS and a better toxicity profile, quite reassuring for the clinical practice to say, in case of toxicity, it doesn't look like we are losing chances to reduce the dose and we will alleviate part of the toxic effects.
Dr. Medford, could you begin by describing the rationale for the LEADER study?
In hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative breast cancer, standard of care is typically after curative treatment, patients go on adjuvant therapy. And one challenge to that is, unfortunately, up to a third of patients can experience distant recurrence. And so there have been assays that have been developed to try to assess what patients are at increased risk of recurrence. And what they do is they assess for something called circulating tumor DNA or ctDNA. And so the LEADER trial, part one, was evaluating the addition of the CDK4/6 inhibitor ribociclib to adjuvant endocrine therapy to assess different dosing and how patients would tolerate those regimens. But additionally, what they did was they ended up taking additional ctDNA sampling throughout 42 of the 81 patients' courses to evaluate for evidence of ctDNA, which we would call minimal residual disease, or MRD. And what's interesting is that of the 42 patients, only two patients had positive ctDNA, so evidence of minimal residual disease. And at the time of follow-up, those are the only two patients that actually had metastatic recurrence, both of which were preceding clinical recurrence by 7 and 8 months for each of the two patients. And then meanwhile, 40 other patients had multiple testing for ctDNA, all of which were negative. And at the time of follow-up, none of those patients have experienced recurrence at this time.
What patient population was observed here, and what unmet needs still exist?
These were patients that had early stage estrogen receptor positive, hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative breast cancer. They'd undergone curative therapy, so they had received surgery. If they had an indication for radiation, they would have received radiation. If they had an indication for chemotherapy, they would have received chemotherapy. And then they would have been on adjuvant endocrine therapy, so they were already receiving kind of the standard of care of how we maximally prevent recurrence per standard of care for hormone receptor positive HER2 negative breast cancer. The unmet need is the number of patients that still unfortunately experience recurrence. And the ctDNA story that's been evolving with these more sensitive assays is patients who are ctDNA positive. ctDNA has a half-life of maximum 2 hours. And so knowing that a patient has ctDNA, that is evidence that there is tumor at some capacity in the body, and we have clinical studies that have validated that and shown that if you have ctDNA, the risk of recurrence is quite high. And so the unmet need is, well, now that we know that there's an increased risk of recurrence, what can we do to reduce that risk? And that's where we're looking at the addition of adjuvant CDK4/6 inhibitor, in this case ribociclib, to standard of care endocrine therapy.
What does the future look like for this research?
These are the ctDNA results of part one of LEADER. And so part one, the primary purpose of part one was really to evaluate this addition of ribociclib in these different dosing regimens. Part two of LEADER is, I think, attempting to answer a very important clinical question. So for part two, patients who are ctDNA positive based on these assays, so if they have evidence of minimal residual disease, they then will receive adjuvant ribociclib in addition to standard of care endocrine therapy. And so the primary endpoint will be the ctDNA clearance, and then secondary endpoints will be the survival outcomes. And so the question is, we now know and are in the LEADER Part 1 trial are reaffirming that there's a poor prognosis associated with ctDNA positivity. Part 2 is going to assess, well, what can we do about it to improve patient care? So I would be on the lookout for the results of Part 2 of LEADER and looking forward to being a part of that.
How might these findings contextualize the importance of ctDNA monitoring in breast cancer in general?
Right now, I'd say that that's still an area under study in the early stage breast cancer setting. We've answered some very important questions so far. We know that ctDNA detection is associated with an increased risk of recurrence. The outstanding question is, what do we do about it? Because unfortunately, right now, knowing that a patient has a high risk of recurrence would be a very anxiety-provoking piece of information without us having something to offer that we know is evidence-based. And that's why these clinical trials, multiple clinical trials that are being run in the ctDNA positive, the MRD space, are so important, because I'm hoping that we are going to be able to find something that can improve patient outcomes when they have positive ctDNA. And at the end of the day, our primary goal is to improve patients' lives, and so that's the hope.
From this research, what is the main message for colleagues?
Through incredible collaboration and scientific interest and work and time, we've now developed assays that are so sensitive that we can detect breast cancer recurrence very, very early. And now I think our next step that we're working on together is finding what we can do to improve patient care in light of that new information. And there's been incredible progress to this point. And then the next step for us to work together towards is finding tools to improve patient care.
Dr. Spring, to start off, could you provide some background on the responder trial and the rationale for this HER2-low analysis?
This is a major study in the field through SWOG and reported by Dr. Kevin Kalinske in the past and published in New England Journal, where they looked at the 21 gene recurrence score in women with 1-3 positive lymph nodes, hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative breast cancer with scores under 26. And in the primary publication, they showed that overall chemotherapy was not helpful in that group, but there was some benefit seen in premenopausal women. So what we did in this current study is essentially a sub-analysis of that study, where we want to look if those results were different at all if you factored in so-called HER2-low status, which has been a major topic at the meeting this year. And we found that when considering HER2-low status, the results looked quite similar. So ultimately concluded that HER2-low status should not be used in decision-making regarding this population.
What will be the role of the pathologist as HER2-low becomes more of a focus in breast cancer?
Pathology is going to play a major role here. I think it's been discussed a lot at the meeting, the subjectivity involved with HER2 testing. But now that we have agents approved in this setting, in the advanced breast cancer setting, it's really going to be important for accurate HER2 testing. There's a lot of different methods being explored by different groups.
How do the results of this analysis continue to emphasize the importance of identifying patient-specific HER2 statuses?
So in this analysis, it focuses on localized breast cancer, where we don't yet have an approval for HER2 low with a specific drug. But I think it contributes to the overall literature in this space about, is HER2 low a separate entity or not? And that was a focus of the debate yesterday. And I think this was one of the abstracts that supported that it is not a separate entity. Yet we know it is predictive of response to trastuzumab deruxtecan in the advanced breast cancer setting.
What would you say is a main message for colleagues from this study?
Overall, I would say that in the localized breast cancer setting, specifically in this study population, so women with hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative breast cancer with 1-3 positive lymph nodes, that HER2 low status is not a factor in their treatment plan at this time.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by Novartis. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.